Wake up, Lincoln.
I overslept. Damn rooster didn't crow.
It's time for Early Break. Sponsored by Pinnacle Bank. Live from Lincoln, America. Here's 93.7 The Ticket's Jake Sorensen.
I'm wrong, but I'm not.
Husker Online, Steve Sipple.
If I were a feral cat.
And longtime college football assistant coach, Bill Bush.
You get one team. Mine's the Houston Oilers. I'm not the Texans, and I'm not the Titans, so I'm out.
This is Early Break.
Welcome back to Hour 2 on a Thursday. Steve Sipple, Jake Sorensen, Bill Bush on Early Break. Hour 2 sponsored by our friends at Pinnacle Bank, who have a special mortgage promotion going on right now for the Breakers. Now through June 30th, when you apply for a mortgage loan or a home refi and close with Chris Lauer, Adam Lenzen, or Marlon Lyon at Pinnacle Bank, you will get a golf package at Tatanka Golf Club in Northeast Nebraska. It's a round of golf for four, cart rentals, and a one-night, two-room hotel stay at Ohia Casino.
Ohia!
Or $250 towards your closing cost. Please call Chris, Adam, or Marlon at 402-436-2462. Mention the code BREAKERS for this Pinnacle Bank member, FDIC, equal housing lender.
Cash saving. No one else is like the top of the line in officials? We have them on right now.
We
Jake,
do.
Can you lead us off here,
well,
Jake.
If you were watching the national championship,
Natty,
this but just a month ago, yesterday, April 6th,
okay,
Michigan right? And UConn, you would have saw this gentleman we have on now. That is, of course, Kip Kissinger, longtime exceptional college basketball referee. Kip, good morning. Welcome to our show. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Good morning, guys. Great to see you all again, and thanks for having me this morning.
What a voice. He has a radio voice. He could take our job. He could take our job tomorrow, and we'd have no idea. And I don't think we could do his job. If the three of us had to do the national championship game, there probably would have been some comments afterwards on some calls that were made.
Don't sell yourself short.
Believe in yourself, Bill.
Kip is a fellow plainsman.
Hall of Famer.
Established Hall of Famer. This. Established plainsman, Hall of Famer, state champion, national champion, Sandy Creek. Thank you for what he's done to the state of Nebraska. Wow.
Yes, very accomplished. Now, we have to ask you, Kip, you know, you were, again, at the national championship. We'll get to your story, how do you get there, but what is it like to referee at the pinnacle of the sport? The season ends there, and you're part of it. What's that like, Kip?
Yeah, no, it's quite an honor, no doubt. It's a little overwhelming, to be honest with you. I mean, I had been there previous three times, but first time stepping on the court for the final game, and it just had an extra level of excitement, an extra level of obviously magnitude, so to say. And so walking up on the court that night, having been my fourth one and the first championship, I definitely slowed down a little bit and took it all in. It was definitely more special than the other three because of the finality of it and what it meant obviously to the players and teams and really all referees that come through the ranks, you know, that was always our goal, is to be able to work that game, be selected to work it, and to have that opportunity was very humbling.
Kip, Bill Bush, 93.7 The Ticket. Tell us what is talked about right before, and you guys are out there, I know, for pregame and stuff, but what is one of the last discussions that the three of you have before you go on the court, before the game starts, of like, here's what we're doing. We got to focus on this. Like, what are some of the last things that are discussed as the group before you head out onto the court?
Yeah, great question, Bill. Good to see you. I mean, I think despite what I just said about the actual game, what we try to do is approach it just like every other game. Obviously, we understand the magnitude of it, but you know, we're creatures of habit, referees, and so creating that habit throughout the year as we progress through the year and through our careers, we really just take that moment in time in the locker room before to go through our pregame of what we, you know, player tendencies, coach tendencies, what are their strengths as a team, and therefore we can be ready for them. Obviously, when the ball goes up, as you know, in sports, things don't always go as you anticipate, right? So obviously having some contingency discussions about if this happens, this is how we need to respond. But really, the three of us that had been selected had worked so many games together over the years. Although unlike football, if you talk to Cleet Blakeman, obviously they work a crew throughout the year, right? Same crew. In basketball, it's completely different. We're with different guys every night as independent contractors. So we have to get to understand and feel, even though that night was two different guys, I'd been with them many times throughout the year and throughout the career. So we had a good feeling of going in, just a comfort level, which I think is incredibly important. That we've, because we had that synergy of previous experiences, a lot of this stuff was just unspoken. But we did certainly take time to review player tendencies, coach tendencies, and how we wanted to hopefully see the first 4 or 5 minutes go of the game.
Kip Kissinger joins us. He reffed the national title game, Michigan's victory. Here's what we're wondering. When you say you came through the ranks, in a nutshell, how does one ascend to your position where you're now reffing national title games and the biggest games of the college basketball season? Why did you rise through the ranks?
Well, I think it's a great question, Sip. I mean, a lot of luck. I'll be honest with you, a lot of luck. Obviously, you have to be good at what you do in anything, but you have to have a lot of luck, and they have to kind of crisscross some paths along the way. I've had tremendous mentors along the way, and I think in any industry, you have to have that. So I had people like John Higgins and Joe DeRosa, Curtis Shaw, Gary Pence, Dick Morrissey, the late Steve Olson, many people, Jim Boomer Bain, that helped bring me along the way. And this wasn't something that I woke up last year and said, hey, I want to work the Final Four.
Right.
It's been a 25, 27 year process. And so to go all the way back to when I was playing at Wesleyan, and Gary Pence identified me during a summer team camp, and that's how it started. And then I was, you know, the next progression of working high school, small college, small Division I, Division II,
okay,
and progressing through that 20-year period prepared me for what opportunity I was given, right? And so when I was selected, it could have been one of any 50 guys, realistically, guys or girls, that were selected. I just happened to be the one that kind of is my turn, so to say.
Kip, obviously after the national championship game, a very polarizing coach in Coach Hurley called you, went with that team, was that group of officials, all-stars, so he had no issues with any of the officiating. What's it like dealing with the personalities on, because you see it animation on the sideline, and you see coaches that are, they're on the court the entire game. They're out on physically in the playing court, mm-hmm, and they're talking nonstop. What is that like dealing with that just prior to the game, what you're getting mentally preparation, and what's it like in the heat of the moment?
Well, the mental preparation goes back to that kind of what I spoke about before, Bill, and just creating good habits, right? And over the 20-year period, you create an ability to block out the noise. Guys like Dusty May and Dan Hurley, who are at the top of their careers, they've gotten there for a reason as well. And so you have to respect their process. Every guy's different. Every guy has a little bit more either animation or how they talk to you, or if they're on the floor a little bit more. So you have to be able to be flexible in dealing with each personality. These guys are making millions of dollars. There's a lot of pressure on it. They're the CEO of their organization, so to say. And so you have to take that all in and just be willing to be flexible in how you communicate. Also knowing that there's always a line that can't be crossed, right? Because there can't be a point in the game where they embarrass the game, they embarrass the crew, they embarrass our supervisor officials. Mm-hmm. That's really where the line is with a lot of us. But a lot of us try to make it fun. We communicate, we develop those relationships with those coaches because it's very, very important. If they don't have trust in the guys that are on the court, that is a big part of being selected, is you have to be able to be in a pool of referees that all these top coaches, in essence, have comfort levels with, right? And so, you know, back to your point, Bill, of talking before the game, you know, we rely on our habits, our good habits, hopefully, to get us through those very high intense situations. And yeah, I mean, Danny was very animated throughout the tournament. There was a lot of notoriety that went around that, some of the things that he did, right? And so we understood that going in, but we didn't referee any different. I mean, we're going to referee the result of whatever they do. We don't go in with preconceived notions.
Talking about Kip Kissinger. Kip, we don't get to talk to high-level refs very often, so I have to speak on behalf of the fan, the crowd. Yes, coaches can get crazy, but fan bases love to boo refs. They love to say, ref, you suck.
Jake's
done
this.
They love to
Jake's
chant.
Booed. He's probably booed you, Kip.
He booed you. Ever hear the word malpractice?
You ever hear the word malpractice?
I hope I haven't booed you,
Jake.
Kip. But I'm on behalf of the fans out there who want to know if they have an impact on changing the game or just getting in the heads of a ref, how much do fan bases actually get in your guys' heads? Or do you guys just block it up and say, I'm professional, I can't hear you? What is it like for you guys?
Yeah, no, I mean, Jake, it's a great question. Obviously, because of the proximity of the fan base, one, physically in the arenas, right? They're on top of us. So we hear everything, right? But the guys that I think that are working at that level in any sport really block that out. You've just over time created a thick skin, so to say, to understand it's part of the game. Can't be offended by it. And supervisors and officials that put guys on those level of games have assessed our ability to block things out over time, right? So it's
okay.
So it's a skill that has to be developed. And I think it is quite funny, honestly, though, when you're in that close of settings to hear some of the things and the Gucci rows of people, the two, three, four rows.
The Gucci. I like this. We're going to use that, Kip, if you're okay with that.
Yeah. I mean, that's not something I create. That's people talk about that in our profession all the time. The Gucci row people that they pay a lot of money, but the thing that they don't oftentimes understand is they have to technically, according to the rules, they're treated like players and coaches in their conduct, right? So they can't use vulgar language. They can't be charging the floor. So they have some parameters by which they are supposed to behave. They don't always do that. And it's not about making a scene of an individual. The way I try to deal with those individuals is kill them with a little kindness, right? Try to see how they react. Go up to them, speak to them during timeouts, see if we can get a smile at them. If we can't and they come right back at you, you know who you're dealing with. And you deal with those people a little differently.
Is the pressure you feel as a ref at all like what you would feel as a player?
I mean, I'll tell you what, Sip, that's a really good question because that's one of the main reasons that I fell in love with refereeing was it gave me that rush of being around the game when I was playing at Wesleyan and I knew my career was coming to an end. Didn't have the skill to play professionally. But I definitely had a passion and a love for the game. And so when I got in high school gymnasiums that were packed in Omaha, that just fueled that fire to continue to feed that competitive edge that I had.
Makes sense.
Kip, we talk about all the time, and here you're going to disagree with this, but I just want a situation you might have remembered. We are pro-court storming. We think it's awesome. We think it's like we like when the crazy and all of a sudden there's a last second shot to get. We don't want anybody hurt. We want everybody safe. We're all about that. Is there one you remember that you were part of where all of a sudden you're on the court and all of a sudden there's a shot and the game ended in a nanosecond and all of a sudden the court was rushed? And then how do you handle it when that's going on?
Yeah, I mean, I can't come to one that I was involved specifically that jumps out at me I was involved in like the melee. I mean, there have been games where you kind of towards the end of the game, maybe the last media timeout, the game manager comes on and says, hey, this is the protocol. Just a reminder, this is the protocol, what we're going to do. If we have, let's just say an example of Kansas State unranked beating Kansas at Kansas State, who's ranked number one. They're going to storm the court. So the protocol, get to the sidelines or get to the stanchion underneath the basket as the referee, wherever you're closest, and then we'll have cops there to take you off. So our goal is when that situation occurs is to get to the perimeter because we know that they're coming to the middle. You don't want to get caught in that melee. I haven't been involved in one where anybody's gotten knocked down or anything like that. I mean, I've heard, and you probably talked to John Higgins before about the one he had specifically Kansas and Kansas State where they upset Kansas and then ended in a brawl at the end where chairs were flying. It was a big deal. I haven't been involved in one like that where they stormed the court. The one of the most memorable ones I had that was game ending was the San Diego State FAU game in the Final Four in 23. They obviously couldn't storm the court at the end of the Final Four, but that experience where game winner, It happened to be Dusty May at FAU getting beat on the game winner, and then he ends up winning to Michigan in our game a month ago. But it was special because it was John Higgins' last game as my mentor. And going into that game, we didn't know it was going to be his last game. It ended up being his last game, and it was quite a memorable experience.
Kip, I mean, I don't feel this way myself, but there's a sentiment out there also that sometimes when games get dicey and refs get criticized a lot, is it rightfully so? Maybe not the case, but some think that there should be a ref post-game press conference to explain any sort of potential calls. Is that a dumb thought? Is that something that should be thought about? Where do you stand on that, Kip?
I mean, it has been out there for many years now, and I think it's really come, Jake, from the social media presence today. And I say this often: in live game gambling has changed for I don't think the better how the fans react in real time. And then when you add Twitter and or X and Instagram and all the TikTok stuff that is able to in real time, it's out there and it's not going anywhere. So I think we have to embrace it. Whether the NCAA is going to go that route, I don't feel at this point there's enough push that I've heard that they're going to. We already have a process in place for rules clarifications where a pool reporter is allowed to come in and ask specific rule questions, not judgment or interpretation or anything like that, but actual rule. What happened in this rule situation to help clarify? The post game interview with like players and coaches do, I don't know where I fall on that, to be honest with you. I just think you don't see it. I don't see it in any other sport, right?
No.
Unless I'm oblivious to it. So I don't anticipate college men's basketball being the first to break the ceiling there.
Kip, question at the end of the Iowa-Nebraska game, there was a crazy play when there was only four on the court. And then there was discussion on whether or not the officials, it was their good job question. To stop that play. Or just,
good question.
So walk us through that. I'm sure that was some of you that was discussed with you guys afterwards. Walk us through what we need to, the fans need to know about something like that happening, because we had never seen it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I would say, Bill, is tough situation all the way around. I think giving kudos to Fred and how I heard his postgame interview and how he took ownership of that as the coach and the team. I mean, ultimately, it is in that situation, the team and players' ownership of that. However, you talk to any veteran referee. We do have a process by which we go through and like count, right? Especially late in game situations. And, you know, there was just a breakdown, obviously, in doing that at that point, at that critical time. You know, conversely, if there had been six on the floor, the referees would have been absolutely, because we would have had to give in a technical foul for excessive players on the floor. In this situation, you could play with four by rule. And so, you know, it's just unfortunate that's how it ended in, because it was such a great game. I remember I was sitting there watching it, and it was just back and forth and games of runs. And it was just, unfortunately, that had to kind of be a cloud over the game.
To be clear, you're not duty bound to let the coaches know or let a coach know you only have four out there. A ref's not.
No. But I think it's kind of like an unwritten thing, right?
That if you see it.
We as a crew, because it's the three of us. We got six eyes out there. We technically go through a process saying we count them four, we give thumbs up, and then we put the ball in play. And then we just had a breakdown in the habit there at that point in time where we just didn't count, I guess. I mean, I wasn't involved in the game for clarity, but I obviously know all three of those guys that did, and they feel awful about it, certainly.
What are the most challenging calls for you on a weekly basis? I mean, just generally speaking.
Yeah. I mean, the game has gotten so fast. These kids are so strong, and they watch obsessively the NBA game, right? They model their game after NBA players and the moves they make. And so our job is very difficult in regards to always trying to keep up with what they're doing. Joe DeRosa once told me the hardest job as referees is to keep up with what they're doing. They're always two or three steps ahead, trying to game the system, right? Trying to bend the rules so that they can gain an advantage. And so I think as time has gone on, we've gotten better at like the Eurostep, obviously. But when that first hit college, we were calling travelings inaccurately until we got used to seeing it, as an example.
Yes.
The block charge used to be one of the hardest plays, but now it's you rarely have the block charge play anymore at the hoop because of the restricted arc, right? The 4 foot restricted arc.
Yeah.
Combined with the rule change a couple years ago where you can hardly take a charge because you have to be there before the last foot hits the floor. So it's a lot harder to take a charge now. And therefore, the coaches are coaching their team not to even try to take charges. They're like, ole, take it to the hoop and score it, which I think is better for the game because the scoring has gone way up. Hardest play right now, I think, is the goaltending.
Okay.
These kids and the rule change this year where now – the coaches, we have to make a call on the floor and the coach now can challenge it, right, by rule, but they only get one, potentially two challenges a game. The previous rule allowed us to just call it, and if we had any inkling that we might be wrong, we can go look at it at the media timeout. So we were protected there a little bit, but that's probably one of the hardest plays because it happens so fast.
Kip, how far do you run during a game?
Ooh.
Because, I mean, you're hauling up and down the court. I mean, that game is so fast. All of a sudden, there's been a steal or whatever's going on. But just in general, how far do you run?
I'm going to say, depending on pace of play and style play, it's somewhere between 2 and 3 miles, 3.5 miles. I did a pedometer years ago, and it was somewhere between 2.5 and 3 miles, I believe.
At a high pace.
Is there some sort of conditioning program you do before the season, Kip, or during the season? I mean, because you guys have to run a lot. Is there any sort of conditioning you guys do as refs?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think as time has gone on, I mean, like I said previously, these guys are fast. They're strong. They're the pace of play. A lot of these coaches have, again, mirrored the NBA from an analytics standpoint and getting shots up. And so the pace of play, like for an Alabama example, you know, they may give up 100 points, but they're going to score 110. And so those types of games versus a slow down pace, those are the differences. So, yeah, we're all former athletes. I wouldn't say we're at the top of the athletic chain at this point in our careers. You know, a lot of us are 30, 40, 50 years old, but you have to take care of your body. And so that involves being disciplined with your rest. It's hard with the travel. It's a grind. Preseason workouts are different than in-season workouts, but yeah, going into season, a lot of us take a lot of pride in the discipline it takes to be prepared to referee at a high level.
Quick, you already talked on the block charge. It seems to me,
Hey guys, Jake Sorensen. You've got weight loss goals, but hitting them is another story. Enter Weight Loss by Hims. It's designed to support you in losing the weight and keeping it off. And Hims now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hims, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite and eat less, so success is within reach. Plus, Wegovy is the first ever GLP-1 pill for weight loss, so there's no needles needed. Through Hims, everything happens online. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Hims makes hitting your goals seamless by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and in-app lifestyle and nutrition support like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hims makes it simple to find a weight loss approach that fits into your world and your wallet if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized for you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. Ready to reach your goals? Visit hims.com/earlybreak to get a personalized, affordable plan that gets you. That's hims.com/earlybreak. hims.com/earlybreak. Weight loss by Hims is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information and restrictions, visit hims.com.
A discussion amongst college referees or any referees to animate it, because the block And the charge call is an animated, and everyone's looking like, what's the call? And all of a sudden, like, you see the block call or the hand behind the head, and it is like aggressive the other way, and the place goes nuts.
Yep.
But that call is always animated. Why is that?
Well, I think you just hit it on the head, Bill. It's such an intense play, oftentimes at the basket, where it's involving a scoring opportunity, potentially their best player, and you've got a decision in a split second. to either take points off the board, put them on the line for an and one potentially or two shots. So it, the dichotomy of that call, because you're going to upset 50% of the crowd 100% of the time with that call, right? And mm-hmm. so oftentimes the intensity of that situation, I think, lends it. You know, I'm of the kind of category that very, very rarely do you have to sell those. They kind of take care of themselves. But there are certain situations, just based on the tempo and the intensity of the game, that it maybe does require that.
Why was the Euro step hard to call, figure out?
I think it's just because my wife and I talk about that all the time. The definition, what's the true definition of a travel in college? Like, it seems like there's inconsistency in what is called now versus like when we were growing up.
Yes.
And it's because the game has evolved. That Euro step where you slow down and change your pace and are stepping from one side to that. It was a play that we didn't see as referees. Our eyes were never trained coming up the ranks until really the last probably 8 or 9 years, maybe 7 or 8 years, where it's now such a common, you see it all the time. And so you rarely see that called anymore. But that first several years, it was inaccurately called travel.
Join Kip Kessinger. Walk us through a week in your life in basketball season, because it starts in what, early November, goes through all the way to April, you know, early April. How many games are you calling per week, and how much are you, you know, traveling during the week? To how far?
Well, I don't think it's any secret anymore because of online access to referees, as far as different sites out there that track us. I mean, we all put on a lot of miles. I mean, we're going coast to coast. Oftentimes, I think it's improved over recent years because of conference alignment, where these conference supervisors, there's teams really across the entire footprint of the country. And a lot of the top referees work in multiple leagues. So we have the opportunity to maybe stay on the West Coast for a week. And that's what I try to work with John and my other supervisors, to maybe work out west for a week, come back to the Midwest for a week, go east for a week. So I'm not ping ponging across the country like I had when I was younger, which is very, very difficult on the body. But a typical day is up at 4 on a first plane between 5:30 and 7:30. Get to the next city between 9 and 11, depending on if there's connections. Typically do breakfast, laundry, workout. And then I'll always get a nap in the afternoon, even if it's for 30 minutes. It's amazing what that power nap will do to kind of
we love them. Me and Steve can. We fantasize about them. Yep.
Am I interrupting your morning nap right
now? No, not right now.
No, that's later on.
It's a little later on. That's right. We get out of here. So, yeah, we do a live radio show. We stay awake for it, Kip.
After nine, the nap hits.
Yeah. Exactly.
But no, I mean, it is a grind. I always kind of joke about it. It's kind of like Groundhog Day every day. The same routine but I love it. I mean, I'm very fortunate, very blessed to be able to do it. And I know all my counterparts feel the exact same way.
Just real quick. Who determines where you go? Do you determine where you go? Is there a governing body? Who determines where you go?
Good question. So there, every conference. So for example, the Big Ten is part of a consortium with other conferences. I think they've got the Summit, Horizon. The Big 12 is aligned with the Missouri Valley, the Pac-12, the new Pac-12 that's coming back, the West Coast, the WAC, Missouri Valley. So every consortium, which is really driven by the Power 4 or 5, have a series of 6 or 8 leagues under it. And so those 4 or 5 guys that are the major conference supervisors really are the ones that dictate how many games you get, where you go. But we're independent contractors as well, right? So we have some say as you progress in your career up the pecking order, where you can say, no, I don't want to work out west because I'm already in the Midwest and I have an opportunity to work at Kansas. I'd rather not go to the West Coast because of travel, right? But when you're a young referee, you'll take games anywhere, any day to build your kind of resume.
Okay.
How many, when you watch the referees, I've never seen this, you see it more in the NFL, all of a sudden a ref, is there always 4 ready to go, or an ankle's rolled, something happens, a situation, you're in a big game, you're in a Big Ten game, wherever you're at, if someone goes down, is there a 4th ready, or do 2 handle it?
So, Bill, during the regular season, there's never an alternate. There's the three of us working a game. I mean, I had a game this year at Central Florida where our third guy, Jeff Anderson, who I worked the championship game with this year, he had an issue with his plantar fascia midway through the first half. He wasn't unable to go the second half, so we had to work two man. And that's fine. We did it growing up. That's how we started refereeing, was two man, and it was like a track meet, and you had to be able to really run up and down. So during the regular seasons, no. When you get into conference tournaments, there'll be an alternate. When you get into the NCAA tournament, same thing. There'll be an alternate. So if it does happen, you've got somebody right there.
Gotcha.
Are you guys like individual acts by refs, histrionics, being overtly making calls like with a lot of emotion, is that discouraged? Do you see what I'm getting at? Do you try to be, like, I guess, for lack of a better terminology, part of the game? Do you try to keep yourself under the radar?
Yeah. I mean, your last thing you said there, Sip, is exactly how I approach it, is to try to blend into the game. I never, in my opinion, it's not the opinion of everybody, but my opinion is to be unnoticed.
Yeah, that's what I always goal, go for, yeah.
Right? Now, that is not the mantra of some other referees across the country that will go unnamed and
but they're there. We know. They're there. We're aware.
Yeah, but and that's fine. And a lot of them are some of my best friends, and I'll kind of, you know, chide them like what are you doing type of deal, and we'll joke about it to try to say like, why are you doing that? But they're independent contractors. I can't say it. The boss that gives them the game, I guess if they have heartburn about it, they could not give them games. And I've seen that happen.
Oh boy.
But to answer your question, yeah, the best we can stay blended in with the game, the better, but always knowing you have to quite possibly come out to be able to make the call that is going to decide a game. That's kind of what we're hired to do. I mean, you have to have the fortitude to do that when it's needed.
You obviously get graded for every game. Has there ever been a time when you're like, well, that was an incredible game, I killed it, and all of a sudden they come back and your grade is like, I have no idea why I'm at a 72 when it was an incredible game. I know I killed it. I made the right calls at the right time. Or sometimes like, man, I don't think I probably missed some stuff there. And it's like, oh, 98, pretty sweet. And is it by the grader? Is it by, because an English teacher reading an essay, it's not always the same grade. So how does that grading work and how does it work for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult conversation because it is such an objective endpoint. Meaning, there is a lot of judgment that goes into making a call. One is the referee. There's a lot of judgment that goes into perceiving the call as the supervisor or the grader of that game, because a lot of times people that grade the games aren't in the arena, right? They're doing it via Teams or via a video review, and you don't get the feel of the vibe in the arena. You don't understand the game within the game that the coach, the referees are maybe managing a really difficult situation that can play into how we make calls as well for the betterment of the game. So to answer your question, yeah, there's been times that's happened. I mean, a lot of the referees that progress to the higher levels, they self-evaluate constantly. I mean, that's something that I'm doing after every game. You know, when you work a game, there's 2 to 8 plays that you have questions in your head about that you immediately go back and look and say, oh, where was I on the court? Could I have had a better angle to see that play better? Okay, I missed that. Next time I want to position adjust to see it this way, right? You have to take it with a grain of salt, the supervisor process or the evaluation process, because to a certain degree, it is an ends to the mean of accountability for referees from the NCAA and the conferences. So I get that, but you can't put too much credence in it because of what I said before, is that maybe the evaluator of that game just sees it differently than you do, because there's so much judgment that goes into a game. But I think the really good referees self-evaluate constantly, are always trying to get better. We may have a good game, but you're never going to have a perfect game. It's not possible because there's so many variables there.
He is longtime college basketball ref and Nebraska Wesleyan Hall of Famer Kip Kissinger. Kip, this has been incredible. Thank you so much for your time.
Early break with Sip and Kip. Early break with Sip and Kip. Just give me a show.
We're just out here.
Me and Jake might be out.
We'll just do something
all of a sudden, Kip's just
Sip and Kip. Yeah. It rhymes. Yeah. Yeah.
It works. Right. If you guys are out, that's fine. I need this job.
Kip, we appreciate the time. We hope to talk to you down the road.
My pleasure, guys. Great to see you. Have a wonderful day.
Absolutely. All right. That is Kip Kissinger. Really, really
What a wealth of information.
How about just, firing questions that you'd always wondered about.
How far do they run? How does this happen? How does this happen?
3 miles in a game,
How do you get to different places? What do you,
how do you call Eurostep?
I don't even know if I know what the Eurostep is.
Well, you couldn't, could have done it. You're slow.
Wow.
The question I wanted to ask him about, which I wish I would have brought up.
You handled that well.
Is the carrying of the ball.
Yeah.
This is, me and Sip, when we played like that, we'd have never made it up the court.
Palming.
It just would have been, tweet, palming. Tweet. We'd have got called every time. If we could have dribbled like that, it would have been so much fun. You had to have, like, the ball on, your hand on top of the ball.
Right.
You had to dribble like this, like, no go. Even if you were dribbling for fun up the court and your hand was on the bottom of the ball and you did this with the ball, boop, palming.
How about Kip Kissinger, too? Very measured.
Very.
Yeah. Oh, like extremely. That's how I want a ref to sound.
Yeah.
Just like a judge.
He says,
like, I don't want Larry the Cable Guy. I love Larry the Cable.
We all do.
No, we know.
We all love him. But
not as a ref, though.
But I don't need a humor act on my radio show. I like calm, measured, like a policeman. Right?
Oh, he really struggled with the four on the court. Because basically, he had friends that were on the court.
Yes.
And they all know as referees that they should have seen it.
Yeah.
There wasn't a rule. Wasn't a rule. But
wait a second. Yeah.
The deal was there's no rule. You can play with four.
Right.
So it's not their job. It's kind of a known fact that if unwritten rule, if they're short one, you generally see something.
Yeah. Now, hold on. But I didn't like – now, there was some talk right after the game, and you were there, Nebraska game, of that's on the refs. That's on the refs to tell.
I know you and me did not see that at all.
I
didn't see it that way.
That's not on the refs. That's on the coach.
Yeah. And I know they felt bad about seeing it, but in the end, it's not. He said it. No, that's just a miss by them as far as a unwritten rule type of a thing.
Unwritten rule. It's not on the refs to identify that.
And
if
also,
it's six, it's a different conversation.
And that also was directly from the head coach on down. There was no refs blew it. Out there.
Fred never played that.
No, he did not.
Fred handled it perfectly.
But it was interesting to hear because we didn't have exact answers. And I guarantee when that play happened, that night, the stuff that was sent out to all the referees of this, there was a situation. And then was it critical? 3 points with, 40-some seconds to go?
It was gigantic.
Yeah, and so it's a critical play. That was discussed by everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you once again to Kip Kissinger for joining us. That was great.
The amount of information.
Wow.
How you travel, how you get graded, what's the arena like, who do you talk to. In football, I don't care what you say, it's way easier. There's times when the ball's not in play. The ball's always in play.
Mm-hmm.
And then also like that, the fan in the Gucci seats.
That's what he said,
Gucci.
That was great. That was sweet.
And so that'll be used for us forever.
Yep.
But the fans, you can hear them. In football, you really don't hear the fans. You don't tell me. If you're the umpire, then I'm hearing somebody that yells at the referee from 50-yard line, 20 rows up. They don't hear him, but you hear it. Boy, you hear it in basketball.
Oh God, you hear it.
You too. Yeah.
Inexact science too. Yeah. A lot of these calls are just judgment calls.
The high school games, there's times if you're sitting up front, you're from me to you from the ref.
Right.
This close. And you talked about the gambling.
Oh,
that's a huge
deal. In-game gambling. Yep. The other one is the prop bets. So someone. His over-under on scoring was 13.
Yep.
And now he goes to the hoop, and you call an offensive foul on him on a shot that maybe he could have got to the line.
Trouble.
I mean, that's trouble. And that's when people lose their minds. They got a couple $100 on this guy scoring 14 points, and he's got 13 late in the game.
Yeah, he said it's affected the game and not in a good way.
No.
Man, that was information. Good. That was insane.
Kip Kissinger.
Local.
That was great.
Bill, thank you for lining that up.
Yeah, we appreciate that.
That is, yes.
Kip and Sip. Sip. I think Sip and Kip sounds better. Sip and
Kip. That's where you want to go?
Okay.
No.
We won't be here tomorrow. It'll be Steve and Kissinger.
We've been kicked off the show.
been a good run for us, though.
You guys got it. I mean, I need it.
Sip can't, what if all of a sudden we go to leave on Monday after the show's over and Sip's kind of arranging his stuff and he's got an extra hour? It's just him and like, Kip. What's going on over here?
Well, nothing.
Nothing. Nothing.
Just go on your merry way.
Go on your way.
I'll call you later.
I'll call you later. All of a sudden, here we go. Sip and Kip.
We got to play the game show. Give us a call right now. 464-568. Five a chance to win a business box of bagels to Bagels and Joe. Today's topic, Throwback Thursday, Nebraska football all-time leaders. Stat leaders. Nebraska football.
You should be good at this.
We'll be surprised, I think. I think there'll be some where you go, huh, I didn't know that was the person.
I'll be damned.
Yeah. If you think you know your Nebraska football all-time leaders, call us 464-5685. Shut Up Simple starts right now.
We've all been there. You're listening to the radio, and then that rage starts to grow inside of you. It starts to consume you. It gets to a point where you just want to yell, Shut Up Simple! No, sorry. I'm sorry. Well, here's your chance. It's time to Shut Up Simple. Call now to play 464-5685. Shut Up Simple. Brought to you by Bagels and Joe.
We have a line open for you, 402-464-5685. Call it again on Sip and Bill in trivia. The record, 2-1 on the week. Going for a winning week.
Okay, here we go.
I mean, we're both...
Why are people scared of Nebraska football all-time leaders? Come on, callers.
Now, this shouldn't be hard,
don't
but
be
now
scared.
I don't know.
I'm in my late 50s. I've covered the program for 30 years. Yes. I'm really scared.
Yeah.
I should know these things. But
it's going to be very unique things. It's going to be odd.
I'm not trying to trick anybody here.
I know.
I think these are all very gettable answers.
So the thing we're looking for, right, Steve, to identify is if I go with, let's live a little. That's where we want to press
Walter,
pause.
Walter Snead.
Walter Snead and smoothness.
Walter Snead.
All right. We've got Jim. How do you feel about Nebraska James. Football all-time leaders today, Jim?
It might be tough.
Okay. All right. Jim, where are you calling from?
Geneva.
Oh! Geneva. Oh, that's nice. Nice little town right there. Jim, was there a chance, could you text somebody today that's not a breaker
sure.
and see if they could listen?
Sure.
He said, he answered before I said he knew it was
he
coming.
He knew the answer. He knew the question.
Thank you. Please text two, yep. Jim.
Geneva.
Right,
where is
we'll
Geneva?
Do.
Geneva is, what, an hour away?
Hour and
South
a half.
South of York.
Yeah,
South
like
of York.
South
of York.
I was gonna, hour.
I was
an
gonna,
hour.
How far from Fairbury?
About an hour.
Well, it's that far from Fairbury. I thought it was closer than that. Okay. All right, Jim. Yeah. First question to you, Bill. A lifeline for one question for Sip. Bill, who leads Nebraska in all-time career passing yards with 8,871 yards?
It's one of two, right?
This is for you, Jim.
It's one of two, right, Steve?
Let's go Zach Taylor.
He's only here for 2 years, unfortunately.
That's not a bad guess.
Great years, though. Do you guys want to steal this, or you want to let it pass?
Well,
the steal yesterday did not go well.
Pretty
for you.
Sure that. See, Ferragamo transferred in.
No way.
And then
no way, Ferragamo.
Then Hum, David Hum.
So you're gonna pass.
We're gonna pass. Yeah.
It'd be Tommy Armstrong Jr., all-time leading passer at Nebraska.
I thought of that later.
8,871 yards for Tommy.
Didn't know that.
Right, I confess to not knowing that.
First question, 0-0 tie.
This is embarrassing.
Who has the most passing yards in an individual season for Nebraska with 3,568 yards?
I know this one.
Go ahead.
That'd be Joe Gans.
Brilliant!
Joe Gans is correct, 2008 for that record.
Great job.
Joe Gans.
Yeah. For the tie, Jim, last question down 1-0. Who holds the record for most rushing yards in a game at Nebraska with 307 yards?
Calvin Jones.
No. Sip, this is for the win if you want it. Bill is in play if you'd like.
Let Bill do this.
Well, hope I don't miss it that. Ray Helu?
Roy Helu.
Brilliant!
Roy Helu Jr. is correct.
Roy Helu.
And
Ray Helu.
Jim, we'll get you a bagel and a coffee. Thanks for calling in and calling down the road,
right,
Jim.
Thanks.
Not sure why I said that wrong. Jim. It came out wrong. I know who Roy is.
Got it, though.
Ray
it.
Roy, you know.
Yeah. Ray Helu.
I wasn't here for that game.
Ray Helu.
I was here when we recruited him.
Ray, I know.
He was, yeah. That game was amazing.
It was.
They couldn't. You know, Missouri was good. It was not a bad Missouri
team.
It was
Gabbert.
That was a ranked Missouri team, if I recall. Like, they were not bad.
Pinkle Gabbert. They were good.
You want the record for most sacks in a single game at Nebraska with 5.
Who single game?
Who has single that? Game sack leader with 5. God, who got 5?
Was it an inside guy or outside guy?
This name gets brought up on the show from time to time.
Jared Crick.
Is it Jared Crick? Yes, it is Jared Crick.
I thought that was the inside guy.
We did good.
Who was that against?
That was against Baylor in 2009 Baylor, yeah. Because they tried to put on Sue, and Sue was like, okay, well, Jared Crick's really good. Get your sack.
I'm just telling you right now, it was playing Baylor. That wasn't Akron. That was Baylor. He got 5 sacks in one game. You know what it's like to get 5 sacks in one game? A lot of times a season is a good job.
Baylor team. I remember that quarterback.
Wasn't it Robert Griffin III?
No.
No, it was before him?
It was a white guy.
Okay. Okay. Well, last question, then tiebreaker. How many Huskers have had 20-plus sacks in their career at Nebraska?
20-plus.
Who's putting the number out here?
Write a number down.
You've already won the game. It's for fun.
20-plus.
20-plus sacks in their career at Nebraska. Have all the names written down.
All the
and
names.
A number.
This is what I think.
Oh, we're right in the same neighborhood.
Okay. Stip has 9. I have 8.
The answer is 8. And here are the Trev Alberts.
Hold on. I don't get the ding. I hit it on the dot.
You hit it. Well, sorry. I'm sorry about that, Bill. Because there's 8. Okay. Trev Alberts.
Okay, Trev Alberts.
Grant Wistrom. Is it Jim Scow?
Scow.
Yeah. Scow. Danny Noonan.
Yep. Danny Noonan.
Ndamukong Suh. Broderick Thomas. Our own Adam Carricker. Mm-hmm. And Jared Crick. Oh, wow. Had 20-plus sacks in their career.
That's a list.
Yeah.
Not
that's
bad.
Wow. Tip your cap to those guys. Those are dudes.
Yeah.
Those are dudes.
20-plus. It's been a long time.
Crick's on that list.
Yes, he is. Hour 3 is next on Early Break in the Ticket.